from the Cyber Hub bunker in studio. You're tuning in to the Cyber Hub podcast. And now for your host and CISO, James Azar.
What's happening, security gang? Happy Friday. Welcome to another Friday conversation. My BFF from another mother, Mr. Falone, welcome to the show, buddy. How are you?
Good. I see you're finally back in your studio.
Kind of. It's not fully done yet, right? Like, the studio is not fully done. It's still, the walls are very, very bare. That none of the sound barriers are up. But yeah, I'm at least not sitting in a dining room anymore.
That's true. That's positive.
Which is refreshing, which is nice. I'm not going to lie. It's nice. It's good. It's what I want, right? I want to be in my area with my espresso machine nearby and away from the kitchen, because, man, if you ever sit next to a kitchen, it's problematic. But this is a 3-minute show, and we're not going to drift and draft. First of all, for everyone tuning in, thank you so much. We appreciate all the feedback, questions, and kind of everything that comes from the people who watch after the fact. I'd be remiss if we didn't start off with this being Memorial Day. Memorial Day is Monday. That's a national holiday in the United States. It's a day we remember the sacrifice of the many men and women who've served this nation in its history since 1776 to this very day. And so I know some people go, it's a barbecue, it's a holiday, it's a bank holiday, and it's great that you're able to celebrate freely in this country. But in a moment of celebration, take a moment to remember that for many, many families of those who perished while serving this country, who've made the ultimate sacrifice, this weekend is a constant reminder of the sacrifice their loved ones made and will reignite the emotions and feelings that they have missing their loved ones. And so just be mindful of that. If you live or know a Gold Star family, this is a great weekend to just be there and listen, to listen to the stories. It's a great weekend to just reach out and put your hand on someone's shoulder and say, I see you. And then this country is great because we celebrate our freedoms, rightfully so. But this weekend is not a holiday. It is very much a long weekend for many of these families that are missing their loved ones. And this hits as hard as a birthday, an anniversary, or the death day of their loved ones. So I'll switch into the show. Mr. Falone, last week you and I talked a little bit about frameworks. Go ahead. I'll pass it off to you.
We did. And I think we, by the end of the conversation, you agreed that the CSF might be a great framework that you can start to use for different size organizations without a very mature security plan. So today, what we wanted to do is kind of walk through some of the resources that NIST has and show exactly how both applicable it is and tactical it is, not just from an administrative standpoint, but from a technical standpoint as well. So the first link I'm going to share, let me see if I can do this right, share screen. Never mind, I can't. Are you able to share that?
You can share the screen. Just add it to the feed, and then I'll post it so you have control. Hit the present. Don't mind. Guys, this is a live show. For everyone tuning in who's going like, what? Yeah, it's a live show. And Chris and I are very, 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 very busy. And so we prepare on Signal, and we jump on here a few minutes before we go live. So
I'll have to leave and come right back.
Oh, okay.
Because I can't present like that.
Because you've got security settings on your Chrome browser, huh?
That's right. Yes.
See, so here's a control. You can leave and come back. Leave and come back. I'll do that. I can handle the stage for a few seconds. In your browser, you've always got security controls, and the security controls are really, really important, right? And one of them obviously is, don't get access to my camera, don't get access to my screens, don't get access. If you don't have that set as a default in your browser, you should. And if you're going to do it on a browser and you're going to give those settings by default, make sure that's the only browser and make sure you don't use it for anything but a Google Meet, a kind of streaming type of software, because that's really the best way.
Well, one of the things I love about my Mac is that they're really forward when it comes to settings and letting you know why you need to do them, and making secure by default the easiest way first. So when you do install new software, they won't prompt you to change any of the default settings until you ask for it. So when you install a new software, like the streaming app, and once you request sharing permissions, you have to go through that process, which is good, which means it's not always open all the time. Okay, let's try this again. Share screen.
We're going to try it again. Here we go.
That's your tab. Okay. So first thing I'm sharing here is this is the official webpage for the NIST 2.0 framework. What I want to highlight here is the CSF does not prescribe how outcomes are to be achieved. Rather, it is a link to additional resources and controls that can be used to achieve those outcomes. Okay, so many people might look at the NIST CSF and think that, oh, there's too many controls. I can't do this as a small, medium-sized business. Well, that's not true, because it is not a prescriptive control. It's more of, here's the guardrails, here's the things to think about as you're building out your program. And unlike some other controls that are out there that might require you to do every single thing in order to be compliant, there's no such thing as CSF compliant. So if an auditor tells you you need to be CSF compliant, there's no such thing, because it's really to be tuned for each organization, for their implementation. And the only time that you'll get dinged in a CSF audit is if you try to implement all the controls and you have no reason to do so. So all the ones that you can't properly implement, you'll likely end up having findings for.
Yeah, what you're talking about though is something that I thought of a lot during, you know, kind of the NIST from our conversation last week to this week, which is kind of the risk management aspect of it. NIST is a great way to identify assets and build processes around those assets. Mm-hmm. So
this is the actual printout for the overview. So it's not the full CSF. One of the things to see here is in the new 2.0, they moved govern to be all around, and privacy is now included, while it's not included in the specific imagery. What they want to highlight. Well,
because privacy isn't a control, privacy is an outcome.
Well, recover isn't a control either.
No, but recover is an action. Privacy is neither an action nor an outcome. Privacy is what it is. Privacy. Well,
when you're being compliant to privacy regulations, that's an outcome.
I have a quarrel to pick here for a moment. I know you're getting really technical and I appreciate it, but I got a quarrel to pick here for a moment, and maybe you can help me or our audience can help me. I've got a quarrel. I'm going to be controversial for just a moment. So here's the deal. If privacy is a cybersecurity control, why is it that corporations don't put privacy under security, but rather put privacy either under legal or compliance, where it ends up kind of being very similar to security 20 years ago, right? So security 20 years ago was an IT audit function, and it predominantly created policies that IT would go out and enforce, and then every so often you would audit that to do that. Now, in most organizations, at least the very, very big ones, privacy is doesn't report to security. It's nowhere near security. In fact, it's far away from security. That's number one. Number two, and I think the really big one there that I think everyone's got to pay attention to is it's not only away from security per se, but typically it's under legal or compliance, and security ends up getting rules and requirements from privacy and being a conduit to the execution, which to me is a quarrel. If NIST's idea here with the new CSF and the working group, because this isn't something that NIST developed on their own with their academics, this was private public, you know, this was a private public partnership with a lot of industry input into this new framework. Adding privacy is important, but where's the push to get privacy under cyber?
It's not necessarily under cyber. So it's going to have components like if we look into, say, more specifically into your govern category, you're going to have parts of your govern, and I'm going to find it in another screen so I can pull it up. Okay, so we're looking at govern 03. So I'm going to go up next page. Share. Stop.
We're kind of going through the different things that are pulling up on screen here, y'all, and that's really important to kind of see. And the reason we say that is because you want to be as technical as humanly possible when you look at this stuff, to really understand the controls. My quarrel again with this is specifically why I look at NIST and I more subscribe to CIS, right? Because of the control aspect of it. But go ahead.
So if we look here, part of govern is the circumstances, mission, expectations, dependencies, legal and regulatory and compliant contractual requirements surrounding the organization's cybersecurity risk management decisions are understood. Subsection here, 03, regulatory
and contractual requirements regarding cyber, including privacy and civil liberty obligations, are understood and managed. Problem here, though, is you're not the one managing them, right? You're not the one managing privacy in most organizations. I mean,
well, we don't manage legal either.
No, but the legal, you don't need to manage legal to have to be legal. There's cybersecurity and privacy requirements in every contract. Adding privacy to security, I feel like, adds more responsibility, which I get and understand. I'm not fighting the responsibility. I'm just fighting the fact that we've added something to a framework where you have even less control than what you've had in IT.
Well, not necessarily, because if you go, for example, you dig in and you go to the specific control here from 800-53, AC01 is account access. So here you have to develop and define from an organizational level what you're looking to do to create your accounts, to create your access policies, and to define that. That becomes part of your privacy concern, because you want your account access to give them least privilege, give them access only to the data that they need, as well as not allowing them to over access, say if they have access to client data, say you're in a big bank, why do you need access to 10,000 accounts within an hour? That seems fishy. But if you're working through the 20 people that you have in line within an hour, that makes more sense. So developing a certain threshold of how you create that account, that access control for that data, then becomes where your privacy requirements fall in.
Agreed. All right. Nailed it on the head, Chris. Beautiful. Doesn't change what I think about it, though.
I'm not trying to change what you think about it, but what I did want to show here for those looking is kind of how NIST CSF tells you what you need to think about within your governance framework, And then when you drill in deeper, then you actually see the controls within this CSF that you could implement to start to make those requirements possible and meeting technical controls. Some of them technical controls, like access controls, some of them business controls, but the different NIST CSF controls, and they'll help you determine, for example, in this case here, determine, process, track, and manage legal requirements for protecting individuals' identity, HIPAA, things like that.
I want to be clear about what I mean. All right. There are specific things that we do in security that as our part of our controls or part of our risk management already kind of automatically will comply with privacy, right? It's just standard. Like, to me, security equals compliance, not compliance does not always equal security. And I think that's very, you know, that's very, very, very basic. The second part to this whole idea of govern, when you're looking at all the different frameworks that exist in terms of compliance, whether it be, you know, CCPA or, you know, Vermont as new privacy bill or what you're seeing in Illinois and other places is what ends up happening is you're building a specific set of controls that help achieve security and entail address privacy. Yet when brass tacks come to it from an audit perspective, you lack the oversight as a practitioner in terms of fighting for the controls or creating additional business processes. See, to me, this is one of the biggest challenges we have in the dysfunctions and kind of the corporate function of the way we approach cybersecurity and then the way we look at these frameworks. The dysfunction is you've got to look at the NIST CSF or CIS or MITRE or whatever you look at. You've got to look at it the same way you would look at anything else is what does it do to help me? Right. Yes. And then what kind of within my role, within the org structure, within the areas of responsibilities that I've been given authority over in the company, what influence do I have on specific things? And I think this is one of the more confusing aspects of looking at any framework. If you look at the CIS framework talks about application security and infrastructure, right? And they talk about kind of setting those up. And if you think
of the CIS ones are specifically controls. They're not, it's not a governance structure.
I agree. That's not the claim I'm making. What I'm trying to say though is that the governance in itself is limited in scope based on your role, and so are the controls, right? Yes. So what I'm trying to get to is one of the feedback I got from last week's show was from a dear friend, someone I highly respect. And they said, they actually agreed with a lot of things we said on the show, Chris, but something that really stuck with me and is really kind of percolating in my head and has been for about 6 days now, is this idea of what's in, when you look at NIST CSF as a governance framework, you have to look at it. And then you've got to map your areas of responsibility to the govern factor of the NIST CSF. And the reason I say that is because there's going to be a gap analysis there. There's going to be a gap where you say, I need to be able to do these five things, not to be NIST compliant, because no one does NIST compliant, right?
Correct. It's not a thing.
It's not a thing. But in order for me to be able to give the board the right risk assessment when it comes to information security, data security, and operational security for the organization, because that's really, when you look at the many lines of disciplines of cybersecurity as a CISO, as a leader, as a practitioner, you're in charge of ensuring some level of security either to data, IT systems, operational systems, or the latter. So when we look at this, you've got to be able to build yourself a gap analysis. And I think that's a great first step is when you look at the NIST govern and then look at your areas of responsibility that lie within your job description and areas of responsibility given you by your organization. Then start to identify the gaps where, according to the organization, you don't have that. And that kind of becomes the internal politics brass tacks here real quick, yeah, right?
Exactly.
That kind of becomes your internal battle with your supervisors, which you're with leadership in terms of, and I don't mean battle like fist fight, but I'm talking about the gaps that exist within the areas of responsibilities that introduce more risk through the organization for a multitude of reasons. It could be because no one's looking at it. It could be because someone's looking at it from a compliance perspective and not a security perspective. Mm-hmm. It could be that someone's not assessing that risk properly or have identified that there is a gap within there. And it's a great way to really gain some more authority as a security practitioner by doing that.
And that's why I highlighted this oversight section, section one, is that the cybersecurity risk management strategy outcomes are reviewed, informed, and adjusted to the direction of the overall organization's wide risk management approach. And you can't look at it as separate entities. Like, we've been so siloed for so many years that you're like, oh, that's IT risk versus legal risk versus risk management risk. No, it's all the same risk. You have to eventually put it all in the same risk register if you're doing it right. And whether it is, hey, I could get fined because I don't meet this legal requirement in New York. If you don't meet the legal requirement, or if you don't have a good risk management posture, both of them end up affecting the organization and could affect them in similar ways. So that's important there. The last thing I wanted to touch on is how CSF is really that guardrail to many other different frameworks. And I'm trying to pull that up on another screen so I can present. But in the meantime, James, like, when you look at all of these controls, like, people get overwhelmed and they think like they have to implement all of these controls. They don't. They just have to find the right ones for their organization and where would be the optimal place to achieve the high level results of the strategy with some of these controls. They don't have to do all of them.
Yeah. What I would say is, you can take all of those controls, you can put them on a CSV or whatever, you know, or any sort of tool that you would use to manage this. And I would start rating the greatest risk to your organization based on your risk, internal risk assessment. And I would just start going through those controls. A lot of times I see this often in terms of a self-pat we want to give ourselves, right, Chris? Yeah. Kind of, I did something. And so we'll take the least important controls that really are basic in nature, do very little to really create resilience or any sort of sense of security outside of saying I did it in order to pat myself on the back, and do those because it's the path of least resistance. And while that's great, if you're not resolving the greatest risk to your organization and you're not able to argue for that greatest risk of your organization, then you're really in kind of a batter. One of the tips I would give anyone when they reach out in that type of scenario is the following. You've got to, one, have the relationship with the different leaders within the business where you need some sort of influence. And number two, you've got to be able to communicate it in their language. And if you're wondering how to do that, I hear AI does a great thing. You know, one thing I've noticed is something called prompt engineers. That's an actual new title, prompt engineers, right?
I love that. I love doing that.
So grab a prompt and take whatever you want to say in cyber and just tell ChatGPT, rewrite this so in a language that an application developer would understand. Re-quantify this risk in a way that a data scientist would understand, and it would rewrite it and reposition it in a way, and don't do it once and roll with it. Do it 2, 3, 4, 5 times, because it'll regenerate different answers and change the prompts a little bit, mess with it, and it'll give you just enough in order to be able to communicate the risk in a way that would make sense to the people who've got to go in and put in the controls. Because at the end of the day, that's what you really need. It's not just about writing a governance control program and putting it in play, but it's really about putting in a governance control, getting it executed, and then together celebrating a victory of reducing risk. And that's really important, by the way. And just so you know, I think one of the greatest things, CISOs, you know, one of the greatest things that's lost in remote work. And I was having this conversation with a good friend of mine, a recruiter, Thomas Richards, and this week. And I said, I think you've got to get people back in the office 3 days a week. There's a level of camaraderie and teamwork that's only achieved when you're face to face with someone. That's not possible to be remote.
True. I think that is true. I think one of the things to consider is the opportunity cost that so many have adjusted to working from home, where they have that much more time in their day. When you start to take away from that, then you end up finding that you're going to find other ways to take away from their work hours. In doing longer lunches, in doing stuff like that during the middle of the day, which they might not have been doing before.
I will gladly take that downside over the upside of what happens in a room full of people. And I see it every time I travel. Every time I travel and I'm in a room with someone and I go, wow, the Slack communication's great, but there's always misunderstandings. All of a sudden we're aligned. We understand each other. We're breaking bread. We're grabbing lunch. We're making a cup of coffee. We're having a conversation face to face. We're looking in the pupils of each other's eyes. Look, I think the only way you can do that is if you're in person. And I think that within the next several years, you will see that people will be back in the office 3 days a week.
I definitely think like strategic meetings like that are important and need to happen in person. We've lost the ability to manage meetings effectively. And I think from that, we have to make sure that when we have people back in the office, that we're using their time wisely.
Absolutely. I know we're at time here. It's the bottom half of the hour. Any final words before we depart this Friday?
Yes. Mr. I just wanted to show some quick implementation guidance that they share. They have different templates that are designed, whether for small business, larger business, ERM, supply chain. Those are some of the cool things that they came out with. This roundabout, it goes down to creating your identify strategy, helping you figure that out. So as a small business, oh, look, here's a link to a risk register template. Oh, here's a link to what might be sensitive. And it really helps walk the small businesses through what might be applicable to them. And as you see here in identify, they only have a couple controls out of all that you saw before, because that's all that might be applicable to them at that stage. So just a reminder, and I have one more screen I want to share, just so that for the consultants out there or the leaders like yourself, you want to show that you've been growing over time. Here we go. One of the things that you can do to track your growth with using this CSF is look at how informed you are for the different tiers. So partially informed, risk informed, you're doing this stuff all the time. Man, you're getting in data feeds all the time, and you can quickly adapt to what's happening, whether it's in the threat environment, within your own environment, legal environment. So those are the different stages. I will be very clear that this is not a maturity rating, because yes, there's some people that kind of conflate the two. This is just an implementation tier of how you're implementing CSF within your organization.
Absolutely. Well, Chris, thank you so much for sharing. That was awesome. Thank you for everyone for tuning in today. Again, I'm going to sign off with what I started off with. It is Memorial Weekend. Please don't go to a veteran and say Happy Memorial Day. Just please don't do that. There's nothing happy to anyone this weekend. If you're a veteran who served in combat, this weekend is a stark reminder of the men and women you fought with and who made the ultimate sacrifice to give us the freedoms and the country we have today. And when those men and women fought, when they perished, they weren't Republicans or Democrats. They weren't conservatives or liberals. They weren't right or left. They were Americans. And in a time of great division, where people stoke the flames ahead of a presidential election. And I pray that we find that we have a lot more in common than we do have apart. That the divide that exists in the social construct really doesn't exist in the military construct. And when you go to honor those brave men and women who made the ultimate sacrifice, no one's pulling a presidential a poster with them or some sort of political hack with them as well. They're pulling and they're looking at each other and they're hugging each other, irregardless to political opinions, race, creed, religion, or anything else. And so if you take anything away from this weekend and you want to reflect on that, is when those men and women made the ultimate sacrifice, they made it for everyone and not just one group or another, but they made it for everyone combined. And may we as people in this time find that same spirit that they had when they made that ultimate sacrifice for all of us, that at the end of the day, we're all Americans. And at the end of the day, we all want what's best for our country and our fellow neighbors, community, and county and state. We may have a different way to go about it, but when we stop talking, when we fall into social media algorithms and streams and opinions, and we only hear one side, we tend to think the other side's completely wrong. And may this weekend be one of unity, of togetherness, of celebrating these great American heroes' lives that have brought us up to here. And I'll sign off with that. Have a great, great weekend, y'all. Thank you.
Reflective weekend.
We love feedback, so make sure to connect with us on social media and subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform.